not much celebrated in the Baptist church. Can't say I ever had anybody tell me about Ascension Sunday as I grew. But I teach a Bible study at Lake Barrington Woods, where Marge is one of our very faithful folks. And the lectionary leads you to Ascension. And so studying those texts, I began to think, now the 40 days are over. Now the 40 days are complete. Jesus was on earth 40 days after the resurrection, speaking his truth to all of those who were around him, encouraging them and reminding them what he had taught them to do. 40 days where he reinstated Peter. 40 days where he reassured Thomas. 40 days where he reasserted for all who would listen the truth of his coming, that our salvation was purchased, that our sins were forgiven, and that our power to go out in the world was made real. And now it was time. Now the disciples had gathered around him and they wondered, is this it? Is this the moment? After all, he had just said to them, you shall receive power. They were anxious. Is this the moment when we take over? Is this the moment when you restore power to Israel and we can get Rome off the throne? Is this the time when the new David arises? Is this the time when we'll get our power? They were so anxious. They asked, they peppered Jesus with these questions, and they were waiting for him to respond, and he said nothing. In fact, the text says, and after this, meaning after their questions, all he said to them, all he said was, I am going to give you power. But then the next thing that happened was he took a cloud like an elevator up. In silence, he leaves them with their questions hanging. And in the midst of this, all of a sudden, two men in white robes show up. The disciples are looking up. They've asked these questions. They were waiting for answers. They're looking up and the two men appear and say, men of Galilee, why are you gazing up? This same Jesus that you saw leave will come again to you in the same way. Why are you looking up? I frankly think that's a good question. If I had watched him take a cloud, I might have been looking up too. But the angels knew. The angels knew there was a better question for the disciples to ask. Instead of looking up, the angels wanted them to look around. The angels wanted them to look around and to see the work that was theirs to do, to see what they were called to do. The gifts, the examples, the blessings that Jesus had poured out on them, they were ready. Power had been given. They were ready, and all they had left was not to look up. All they had left was their dash. You know the poem? It's in your bulletin. You only hear it at funerals. I don't like hearing it at a funeral. Because once I'm dead and laid out or in that little urn, there's not much I can do about extending my dash. It is now that we ought to hear this poem. It is now when, like the disciples, we don't have to look up, but we can look around and make a difference. Here's the author of the poem reading it.
He noted that first came the date of her birth, and spoke of the following date with tears. But he said what mattered most of all was the dash between those years. For that dash represents all the time that she spent alive on earth. And now only those who loved her know what that little line is worth. For it matters not how much we own, the cars, the house, the cash, What matters is how we live and love and how we spend our dash. So think about this long and hard. Are there things you'd like to change? For you never know how much time is left that can still be rearranged. If we could just slow down enough to consider what's true and real, and always try to understand the way other people feel, and be less quick to anger and show appreciation more, and love the people in our lives like we've never loved before. If we treat each other with respect and more often wear a smile, remembering that this special dash might only last a little while. So when your eulogy is being read, with your life's actions to rehash, would you be proud of the things they say about how you spent your dash?
Beloved, the disciples were looking up. They were waiting for something. But the angels came to say to them, no, 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 this is not a time to wait. Your dash has begun, not the run, but the dash. This is the time when Jesus has moved beyond your sight and moved beyond your touch. This is the time when there is no more listening to him. The Spirit will bring back what he said, but this is your time to work and to serve. And beloved, it is true of us. And I know the way the poem is written, it sounds like your dash begins at the moment of your life. But I wonder if a Christian's dash doesn't fully begin when he or she receives the understanding that we are made in God's image and God's likeness, that we are filled with God's power, and that we are set here to be about loving God and sharing that love and engaging in powerful ways of making real that love through the work that we do, through the gifts that we share. Your dash has begun the moment you say, God, I am choosing you, and I'm choosing to be your disciple and your child in this place, and now it's my turn. And this dash goes forward in a way that is unique to each of us. But it's at least got four parts to it that become a part of who we are and how we spend our dash. You can show your dash by the way you speak. You can show your dash by if your words are filled with critique or if they are filled with encouragement. You can show your dash by if your words are filled with hope or if they're filled with defeat and a kind of pessimism that takes the air away. You can show your dash. You can share your dash by knowing that the writer of James is true, that there is life in the tongue. The power of life and death, the Proverbs say, is in your tongue. You can write your dash, not with ink and pen, but with your words. Beloved, think about it. When people say good things to you, when they encourage you, it allows you to stand up stronger. But a critique can crush the spirit for days. Might we be the ones who write our dash with our mouths in ways that encourage those around us to do the best that they can do? And you can write your dash with your witness. Please know, that word gets so freighted in the Christian lore. I'm going to be a witness. But a witness has one purpose. A witness has to tell the truth of what they saw, what they experienced. I can't be a witness for Mrs. Overby's way of living. I don't know the details of her life. I can't be a witness for what Jane has seen or done or felt. I can only be a witness for what Zena knows. I write my dash not by trying to memorize the whole of the Bible. I write my dash not by trying to tell your story. I write my dash by telling others how good God has been to me. I write my dash by telling others how in the times of difficulty, the Spirit came and helped me move over. My witness is my story. I write my dash in the way I tell my story. People are all too frequently involved with, I don't know the whole Bible. I can't quote scripture. Ah, but you can quote the goodness of God in your life. That's your dash. And you can write your dash by what you challenge. You can write your dash by the assumptions you challenge. Our brothers and sisters in the Southern Baptist Church are about to have a huge fight. Their annual conference is next month, and the president of their largest seminary has made audacious and hateful comments about women in abusive relationships. He told a woman who came to church with two black eyes, whose husband was with her, thank you for your suffering. It brought your husband back to church. I love God's people. I love God's people. And what I'm watching in my Southern Baptist brothers and sisters, and I mean that brothers and sisters, is that the corrective is coming. They are writing their witness because there are those within the ranks of the largest Protestant denomination in the world. 15.8 million people. They are challenging this dear brother's assumptions so that he might learn not to throw him out, not to castigate him, not to say a word that is ugly, but to challenge. You write your dash by what you will challenge in others and in yourself. Our Sunday school curriculum is full of a study of the false narratives of God. All this period of time, we've been challenging what we believe about God. This morning, we challenge, do you earn God's love, or is it simply like the air that you breathe, always present and always available? And many of us had stories about this notion that God does not love us when we mess up. God does not love us when we sin. That's a false narrative. We've got to challenge that. You challenge, you write your dash by how you speak. You write your dash by how you witness. You write your dash by what you challenge. And you write your dash by how you serve. And beloved, throughout the text it tells us that if you serve for fanfare, if you serve for acclaim, then you've got your reward already. That the service that extends that dash, that the service that makes our lives worth living is often never seen and never known. It's often what people do in this church all week long by coming and serving and praying and lifting up. Nobody will know. Nobody would knew David was here at midnight sopping up water unless I said it this morning. But that kind of service in its silence extends the dash. Extends the purposes we were placed here. Beloved, the poem asks, at the end of the dash, will you be pleased? Will we be pleased that we have done our best? Not perfect, not even consistent. That's not what God requires. But that every time I make an attempt, I do my best. Every time I take a step, it's my best. And if it isn't, then I look and learn and take another step so that it becomes my best. The disciples were looking up, but that wasn't the direction. We might look up to see the heavens, but that's not the direction. The direction is to look around us and to see what God would call us to do in this moment in our lives. God's mercies are new every morning, so if the dash got a little crooked yesterday, don't worry. God's love for you is ever present, so if it was a little smudged, that's not a problem. God's presence with you is eternal, so that God's grace gets our dash in order and we can continue to live in a way that chooses to be a blessing, to make a difference. You have the poem in your bulletin that you might remember it. You have the poem in your bulletin that we might be called to not look up but look around and extend our dash. That God's goodness and God's mercy and God's love and God's presence made known by our witness and our words and our service and our challenge, God's love might be made known in the middle of our dash. What is your dash? How are we living that God's name and God's presence and God's love might be made known? Hard work, beloved. Daily work, my brothers and sisters. So come. Come to the table and be fed and strengthened so that you and I might write well our dash.